Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Limitless Estates, where Kyle and Lalita talk to top experts and seasoned passive investors in the business to help provide clarity and key insights to keep you safe on your journey to financial freedom. Our goal is to help you get educated on how to create passive income for you and your family using real estate as your vehicle. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. Now, here are your hosts, Kyle and Lalita.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast. I'm your co-host, Lalita, also joined by Kyle. In continuation of our female guests for the first quarter of 2020 and celebrating successful women in the real estate industry, we have Anna Myers joining us today. Anna, glad you can join us. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. And then way beyond that, thank you so much for having this focus for the first quarter of 2020. I think it's amazing and I'm really pleased and honored to be part of it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, we have tons to cover with you, so let's get started. Anna Myers serves as Vice President at Grow Capitus, which is a commercial real estate investment company in the San Francisco Bay Area. Together with her business partner, Neil Bawa, they approach real estate through a data science lens to create compelling profits for over 1,000 investors. Multifamily U is an apartment investing education company owned by Neil Bawa, which Anna is the lead underwriter for and where she hosts weekly webinar events, among a few other things. Anna and Neil have successfully completed equity raises of $25 million in the last 12 months, resulting in over 1,300 units purchased. So I can really go on forever with your extensive portfolio. So I'm going to stop there and let you take it from here. So Anna, could you please tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you currently do?
Sure. Well, I actually have a really varied background, which I think is probably true for many of us. I've come from a lot of corners in life. So I'm actually the youngest grandchild of a commercial real estate maverick in Southern California. So a lot of people go like, how did you get into commercial real estate? Like, where did that come from? But that's my family. That's the fabric of my life. But as the youngest grandchild, I wasn't really involved in the real estate portfolio because, you know, I was the baby, right? But my dad's an architect, my uncles, they're all involved. My brother's an architect. They all worked at the family office, all my cousins and everything. But I didn't. I actually went into tech. So I became a programmer and went into technology. Interesting side story, because there could be a lot of women listening, or just from this viewpoint of a woman, one of the reasons I went into technology, I actually wanted to be a photographer when I was a young, you know, teen, and I was really into art. And what happened is I had a baby. It was a single parent at 18 and going to college, and I needed to provide for myself. So I figured at that time that working as a programmer, I could make the highest wage, hourly wage, and still put myself through UC Berkeley with my daughter and to provide for my daughter. So that's how I pivoted into tech and became a programmer and had a career in technology for 18 years. So that was also really good. I'm very kind of left and right brain oriented, but my background is very strong in tech. And then after that, I actually pivoted into photography. So I was a photographer for 18 years after being in the tech industry for 18 years. Digital became viable and the tech industry crashed in the year 2000. And I said, okay, enough of this. I've raised my baby is now 18 years old. I'd gotten married and had more children. But I said, I'm going to take this time and do, you know, pursue that passion. Long story short, I realized about 13 years into it that photography is basically owning a job. And even though I had a very successful studio in the San Francisco Bay Area, I was basically, you know, one of the top photographers in the Bay Area. You own a job and there's no exit out of that because they want you. There's no substitute for you. So I said, well, what am I going to do? It took me about a year to figure it out. And then I'm like, duh, real estate. That's my family. That's what I'm going to go back to. And that's what we're all based on, entrepreneurs that do real estate. So I made an exit plan and set an exit plan for 5 years and successfully exited my photography studio to become a full-time real estate investor. And here I am.
That's an awesome story. I love that. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So we've interviewed your partner, Neil Bawa, on this show, but we are thrilled to have you on. So can you tell us a little bit more about what your role in the company is and what your focus is?
Sure. Well, if you look behind me, you'll probably see I have about 17 different hats that I wear. So as I'm the vice president, as you said, but as Neil's business partner, we do a lot of deals. So not only am I the lead underwriter for the group, but I'm also the asset manager for the, at this point we have 10 properties that we've closed on with an 11th coming. So 15, almost 1600 units with, there's always more units coming down. So you have to manage those. So I'm the asset manager. I also run the equity raises. So all of the tasks related to, you know, working with the lawyers and getting all the legal docs ready, getting all the PowerPoint decks ready, the investment summary, I manage the group that brings the equity in. So on a daily basis, interacting with the investors and tracking where all the equity's coming from, the IRA stuff, the 1031 stuff. So lots of transactional stuff as well. And then dealing with the ever-ending pipeline of new deals that we are getting to vet those deals for our upcoming opportunities for investors.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to focus on the underwriting and asset management piece. And we may have to have you come back on and talk about all that other stuff because that's all good stuff. So
yeah, it is good stuff. Actually, it's pretty exciting. I have a really varied job, but that works well for me.
Perfect. So what are some important tips that you teach your students about underwriting?
Yeah. So students being that I do teach the underwriting in Multifamily University, which is our education portal. We now do 3 live day boot camps. Our next one's in LA and in 2020. We've got in March in Atlanta and lots of stuff coming up. So I teach the underwriting. That's what Kyle's referring to in terms of students. And, you know, we're teaching basic underwriting to people, but I will tell you that the number one tip that I tell people is you've got to pay attention to the market demographics. It all comes down to the market, and almost more important than the market, not more important, but as important, is the neighborhood. So if any of you have listened to Neil speak about the real sources, the real focus system on how to pick neighborhoods and micro neighborhoods, that's what we do. That's how we mean the very first thing I do for any deal is to look at the market demographics. So you never can forget that piece. And then after that, I would say another tip for them is to make sure they get their rent comps right. Because if you don't get your rent comps right, then your deal's never going to work, you know. So you really have to spend time making sure you have your not only your classic rent comps or your market rent comps to understand where the market is and how far off the apartment is from that market rent, but also your renovated rents. Mm-hmm. So what is realistically the renovated rent in that area? How far up do you need to go? Do you need granite? Are you fine having, you know, resurface formica? You know, what is the tenant base? Really understanding it. And then understanding the CapEx that it's going to take you to get there. I can tell you so many people will be like, yeah, $5,000, we're going to knock this out of the park. And lo and behold, you come to own the asset and your property manager's like, $5,000, you guys are smoking hopium. Like it's going to be $8,000 to do what you guys want to do. And suddenly your CapEx budget is just blown up. So these details are not just numbers in a spreadsheet. They become a business plan that is your responsibility to enact for your investors. So you really have to dig deep and you have to get the right resources. For example, you know, working with property managers in the market and working with contractors and, you know, don't gloss over those steps and just go with something that somebody gave you.
Yeah, those are great tips. I think a lot of people do think of underwriting as just plugging the numbers into a spreadsheet and letting it spit out a number, right? But that is just so far from the truth. And if you're really getting into it and diving deep, you really have to spend a lot of time, which leads me to my next question is, once you find a viable opportunity, how much time are you spending digging deep and actually underwriting a deal?
Well, it's a good question. However, me personally, we receive deals. So people are sending us deals because we are, you know, we're equity partners. We're much more than equity partners, which I'll talk about in the asset management section. But I'm not going out and actively, you know, working with brokers and finding deals. I receive deals and that are already underwritten. And then, which takes a while, you know, as well to actually dig in and understand all these various spreadsheets that I get every flavor you can imagine, a lot of them homegrown, and understanding what that deal structure is, understanding what their assumptions are, and really getting into the essence of the deal. So I might spend, so I have to frame your question in terms of what my job is. Now, first thing I do is I look at the address, right? And if the address doesn't match my demographics, I don't spend more than 3 minutes on the deal. So let's assume it's a deal that does pass our demographic filters and our partner filters. It's somebody that we want to work with that has the experience we're looking for, et cetera. Then I'm going to spend a couple of hours digging in on it, with looking at it from lots of different ways, turning it lots of different ways. And then what we do, once we have a deal, and then I set up a meeting with the team and ask them to walk me through it. So I would say it's a good, you know, 4 or 5 hours for a deal that I'm involved in, for a deal that we're really serious about. And then once we're like, I'm like, yeah, Neil, I think this one is good, then we actually hire an independent third-party underwriter. And so that before we take a deal to our investors, we want somebody who has no skin, no part of the deal. There's no money that they're being paid other than an hourly rate to vet that deal. And they're using their own spreadsheet, not the spreadsheet that the person provided, which could have little time bombs in there that they don't even realize. There could be a mistake in the formula, right? So that's our independent vetting of the underwriting. So it has to pass through that third-party professional underwriter too, to be a deal that we will pursue. So there's lots of steps that happen before we take a deal and take it to our investors.
Yeah, awesome. I just wanted people to hear how much time and energy goes into actually underwriting a deal. And that's one that's already underwritten, brought
that's
to you,
but
you're spending 5 to 7 hours on easy. So, okay, good.
Yeah,
so,
and I also just want to mention that underwriting is an iterative process, as you mentioned, to acquire a deal, but you also have to keep that it doesn't end once you acquire the deal. You're always going back to your underwriting because that is your business plan. So,
Yep. So
it is, you know, it's not something you're going to do once and put away. It's going to constantly be evolving. Like, oh, that's the CapEx budget. Let me adjust that and see how it affects my returns. Oh, that's what the insurance is going to cost. Let me adjust that and see what the impact is, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So with people bringing you deals, it's probably a much lower number than what I hear out there, but how many deals on average are you seeing before you find one that actually makes sense?
Oh, how many? I probably see 5 deals a week, serious deals a week, ones that make it past our filters. And then we probably are moving forward with maybe one a month. So 1 out of 20, maybe 2 a month.
Okay. Yeah. Which is, you know, that's still because there's other people vetting those deals as
well.
They've
vetted hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of deals to get those to us. So we're really cherry picking, you know, kind of the best of the best. Yes.
Okay. So from a passive investor's perspective, because that's what our podcast is about, is
absolutely
educating passive investors. What are the top 2 to 3 things they should be looking at when they're reviewing a sponsor's underwriting?
Well, I think that the passive investors should also be looking at the market. I think they should do their own analysis of the market. It's very easy to take Neil's class on Udemy. It's a free class. It's a fantastic way to understand how to pick the best markets, how to pick the best neighborhoods, and to understand what's underneath the market fundamentals that we look for. They should be applying those to any deal. And the tools that he teaches to use are free tools on the internet. So there's no cost. It's a free class with free tools. So it's just really great knowledge so that people can look at the underlying demographics of a deal and go like, can these tenants afford to pay rent? Is this really going to be a good market? So that's the first thing, is there's nothing stopping them from doing that same test that we do. And then I would also really look at scrutinize the assumptions of the underwriting. So a couple of the big ones are rent growth. What are they projecting as rent growth in the market? Because that's the way you could really tweak your underwriting and make the deal look super sweet, is by adding aggressive rent growth. The market has to be able to substantiate it. If it's a fantastic market where you're seeing crazy rent growth like St. George or Phoenix, even Las Vegas, then yeah, maybe you can have those higher rent growth for 2, maximum 3 years. But after that 3 year period, it should go down to 2% future, because we don't know what's going to happen after 2 to 3 years, right? Other assumptions, of course, are the exit cap rate, which is another place that people can really play games with underwriting and make any deal can be made to look good by putting a magical exit cap rate in there that just turns the deal into a unicorn, you know?
Which yeah, absolutely.
Not. It's really a borrow.
That is my next question is, do you have a rule of thumb for the exit cap rate? Because that is the one number to me that can make any deal look good if you're just aggressive on that one number.
Yeah, well, we're always assuming that the exit cap rate is going down. We never assume the exit cap rate is going to, that the exit cap rate is going to be increasing. So we never assume that the cap rate is going to be going down in the market, which what happens when the exit cap rate goes down is the deal gets better because it's the divider for your net operating income. So you're going to increase the value, the perceived value of the building by having a lower number, right? So the higher number there. So conservative underwriting dictates that you're always going to have that exit cap rate increase year over year through your hold period. You're projecting that it's going to increase. The standard out there is like 0.1 per year. If, you know, you might say 0.15. You might set, 75 basis points over a 5-year hold. So that's seven and a half that you're going to go up, 0.75, something like that. So, but I wouldn't go any less than 0.1 per year of holding.
Okay. And so I've heard people do it two different ways here. And so we actually go based off of what the current market cap is, not the purchase cap, but some people go based off of what they purchase it for, which to me doesn't always make sense. Cause if you're getting a good deal, you know, it doesn't always make sense. Or if you're overpaying a little bit. So do you go based off the market cap or do you go based off the purchase cap?
It's a really great question. And it can actually work the other way too, Kyle, where you can say, well, somebody could be getting a good deal. So they're buying at a higher cap. But for the value add, you could also be getting not necessarily a bad deal, but you could be buying at a lower cap rate because there's so much meat left on the bone. So the seller is selling you the potential, right? And then it's up to you to drive the actual cap rate of the building by year end of year one to be what you want it to be. So I would say that to use the market cap rate, but to be very, very conservative about that market cap rate that you're using. Because you can really get bit if you're using the sales cap rate in two ways.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so let's kind of switch to asset management now. So first tell our listeners kind of what goes into asset management.
So asset management is managing the building after you take control of it. And a lot of people might think, especially as passive investors, they might think, well, isn't that the property manager's job? But no, that is our job. And that's why I say we're more than equity raisers because we stay on the project to be on the asset management team and to make sure that our investors' returns are safe and on track. So as an asset manager, we have weekly meetings with the property manager. First thing we're going to do is we're going to deliver via our underwriting, right? Here's our business plan. This is what we are planning to do for this building. This is the rent bumps we're expecting. This is how much CapEx. These are the things we're going to do on the exterior. This is, blah, blah, blah. So your property manager needs to really understand your business plan. And it's up to the asset managers then to drive the business plan and provide we provide our property managers with special trackers that we've created that they then use to fill in data from their software, their property management software. As well as receipts and as well, et cetera, to populate those trackers so that the asset management team can really be looking at trends. And, we from those trackers, we generate a dashboard that creates all these different charts and that type of stuff. And that way we see the direction that the building is going and can really stay on top of the business plan. And I will tell you that business plans change because you need to pay attention to what the building is telling you, what the market is telling you, what the rents are telling you. So that way you can be proactive about it. That's why, again, it shouldn't be any surprise to anyone that knows Neil Bawa and Grow Capitus. We're all about data. And we don't just look at data and think it's pretty. We use data to project things, to make trends, to look at charts and turn it this way and turn it that way. And that's we use that for making decisions. So asset management is really critical to have a successful business plan and to be able to pivot successfully based on the trends that you're seeing in your building. It's a very critical piece of apartment passive investors should be looking for a very strong asset management team. It's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. If you think, whether you're active or passive, if you think that it stops at the end once you purchase the building, you're in for a very rude awakening.
Very rude
awakening.
Hard
stuff starts once you purchase it, right? Yeah. And, yeah. You know, if you're going to rely solely on your property management company to execute your business plan with no oversight, you're going to be in big trouble. So
that's right.
Okay.
That's
so right. What are some of the other common issues that people miss when they're talking about asset management or thinking about asset management?
Well, I think that sometimes they think that they can't have much impact on the day-to-day running of the business other than, you know, watching the property manager. And at Grow Capitus, we actually have a team in the Philippines that adds a lot of value. And again, we're using technology and we're using low cost staff. And what we're doing is we're generating a lot more leads for the apartment. So if the apartment on their own, their software, whatever they're using, AppFolio, Yardi, whatever they're using, generally they can like push a button. It's part of their subscription and it pushes out advertisements to advertise on the internet. And they're like, oh, we've got leads. Well, what we do is we 10X those leads by using various technology hacks, all legal, by the way, but our secret sauce, to generate tons of leads for the property. So for example, we have a property in Atlanta that was generating 25 leads a week based on the property management. Once we turned on our mega marketing, that property was getting 180 leads per week. It's just stunning what our mega marketing can do. And then of course it becomes way too much for the property manager to answer the phone because they can't respond to all of that. And that's where our team kicks in with Mega Leasing, where we have our customer service reps, our CSRs, actually setting appointments on and working with the property managers. They've got login to the property management software and they're actually creating appointments. They're following up with the appointments to reschedule if they missed. They're following up for feedback from the appointments and working on all kinds of stuff. Lots of stuff that the property manager really doesn't have time to do, nor do the asset managers, right? I don't have time to be booking all those appointments. And the property manager doesn't have time, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't get done. So we're finding hacks, we're finding ways to create better value for our investors and also to create, you know, happier tenants, because in the long run, this team is also going to be responsible for reputation management, renewal management, community building, all of these things that are really critical for apartments, and nobody really has time to do a good job doing it. Mm-hmm. But when you've got a team, when you've got an army in the Philippines that's well-trained and we're using technology as well as our wits, it's a great match.
Have you seen an increase in your economic and physical occupancies? And do you have like an average on how much they're being bumped up because of all this?
I would say an average of 3-5% increase in occupancy, and the same thing for economic. You've got a lot more ability to change your tenant demographic if you've got lots and lots of leads coming in. We all talk about turning mm-hmm. our tenant base, right? That's we talk about that all the time. Well, if you're just getting the same old leads that you would get, you need a lot more leads, right, to be able to get there and to keep that occupancy up as high as possible. So the other thing we do with the Grow Capitus Efficiency Center is delinquency calls. You know, the property manager says they're oh, well, we're making calls. But if you have this sweet person calling you with this cute little accent, you know, every month to remind you on top of what the property manager is doing, it can only help. There's only, you know, the more people that are in place that are in a productive way, then that's going to help the overthink, because delinquency is the killer of apartments. It's the killer of profits. If people are sitting in your apartments, not paying you rent and taking advantage of these counties' slow sheriffs to get there, and they're living off of you for 3 months, even in a landlord-friendly market, mm-hmm. it can take 2 to 3 months to get somebody out. And then, by the way, once they get out, it doesn't mean like, okay, they're out and we got our own money back. No, now you've got to go spend money to collect the money that they didn't pay you. So bad debt is bad news. Let me tell you, the more you can avoid bad debt in your apartments, it's a huge difference. And that's, again, one thing to look for in the demographics of the market. You know, we've got apartment buildings that have 0% delinquency for 11 months in a row. And we have, you know, ones that are much more challenged than the underwriting led on to believe in the beginning. And now we are using the Grow Capitalist Efficiency Center to really bolster those apartment complexes because of the, you know, higher delinquency than any of us expected.
Yeah, that's great. At least you have a backup plan, right? A plan B, yeah. To kind of say, okay, well, this happened. You know, most apartment owners would say, well, there's not much we can do in this situation, but right. It sounds like you have that backup plan there to drive it into the right direction.
Exactly. And that backup plan can be applied across a lot of asset management. So that's why I say it's not like you can just say, well, there's nothing the property manager can do. I mean, there's only 10 hours they can be working a day. No. We, you know, once we have our CSRs, we're basically working 7 days a week, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, because we've got staff members covering all of this and technology. I mean, technology is an incredible thing.
Yep, absolutely. That's amazing. All right, Lalita's going to take us into our final five questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Anna, here we go. What advice would you give to women out there looking to get started in real estate investing?
Well, I think my advice actually is not that different, whether it's for women or men. So I guess I have to preface it with that. I think that creating a plan for yourself, so creating like how I kind of created an exit plan, and I spent a lot of time educating myself and, you know, going to conferences and kind of creating the path for myself. But what's really important also, I think, is to understand what your superpower is. So look at yourself and understand, what are you good at and what do you enjoy? Especially when you're looking at commercial real estate, it's a team sport. So you don't have to be good at everything. You should focus on what you're good at and look for team members that complement your skill sets with things that you may not be as strong in. So understanding your superpowers from early on is really, really important, I think, in real estate.
Awesome. Great advice. What is the one tool you use in real estate investing that you could not do without?
The internet. On so many levels. If I didn't have the internet, I couldn't be the real estate investor I am today. I live in California. I've never bought property in California other than my own house ever. Mm-hmm. And look at the teams I was just talking about. All of that is because of the internet. Yeah. That we can be doing any of that. So I couldn't do without the internet.
Right. I guess the only thing you could do is just go door knocking without the internet, right?
Yeah, but I wouldn't be buying in California.
Yeah.
I'd have to move to a different place.
Yeah. All right. Can you tell us a story about your biggest mistake in real estate investing, and what is the main takeaway for our listeners?
Well, I guess this one does apply to potentially to a woman situation or a man, but it was when I was investing in single family. This was back in 2006, I think. And I was investing, I needed to do a 1031, and I was looking to buy a couple of different houses based on my grandfather's estate. I was looking to place some money. My brother was like, hey, there's this market in Mississippi, where everybody's cleaning up from Katrina. It's high up, so there's no flooding, and all the workers don't have any place to stay, so they're all staying in this like luxury community. So it's a great place. He's a forensic architect, so he was there working with insurers to understand the damage and all that type of stuff. So I was like, awesome, brother, that's great news. And he's a really smart guy, and he's an architect. Doesn't he know about houses, right? Mm-hmm. So I bought a house there as part of my 1031. Well, what happened is during closing, the insurance changed, and they were now requiring that you had to buy this really expensive insurance through the state that was like for wind and hail. And I was, you know, I was pretty green at real estate investing, and I didn't have the confidence that I have today. And I felt like, well, I gave my word, so I can't walk away from this deal. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to have to, you know, somehow it's going to work, right? Well, no, it didn't work. It worked for a few months because there were a lot of workers there. But what happened is, by changing that insurance, it didn't just impact my deal. It impacted the entire area. Nobody could afford the insurance. All of these homeowners went under, and there was all these empty houses. The whole area was gutted.
Oh, wow.
So it was, and so I ended up doing a short sale. So, you know, I did get out of it, but, you know, not in a way. Of course, it hurt my credit for 8 years. But I should have been a stronger person to like look at the numbers and go like, dude, the insurance changed. I can no longer close on this deal. I'm walking away from it. Mm-hmm. So to have the strength to look at the data and look at the numbers, it's not about being nice. You know, you can't be nice in real estate. You have to be pragmatic and realistic. and it's a deal. And the person on the other side would have found another buyer, but that would have saved me a lot of grief if I had stuck to the numbers and, you know, not been nice about continuing with the deal.
Right. All right. What is it that you need to do now to grow your life to the next level?
I think for myself, it's just focus. I think that my trajectory is doing well right now. And I think it's just a matter of time and staying focused. And especially trying to, for me, to strive for work-life balance. We're crazy busy. And, you know, there's more to life than real estate. That's what we're all trying to do, right? Is get to a point where we have our time. So that's my challenge to get to the next level, is to get to the point where I spend more of my time enjoying and less of my time building.
Perfect. And finally, where can people find out more about you?
Sure. So you can check me out. You can find me at multifamilyu.com. That's multifamily, the letter u.com. I host a lot of webinars there. There's a lot of free education, tons of webinars that we do, and lots of info. So great information about multifamily investing. And then on the grow capitalist side, that's the side of the house that we actually syndicate, and we have lots of opportunities for people that are interested to invest. We have projects that are 1031 eligible if people are interested in getting into a syndication via a 1031. Of course, we are also, support IRA money and 401k and SDIRA, good old cash, as well as opportunity zones. So lots of different ways to interact with us. And whether you want to be an active investor or a passive investor, and we really like to educate our passive investors. So there's lots of information you can get at multifamilyu.com.
Perfect. Well, that was so much great content. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise and knowledge with us today, Anna.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I really love what you guys are doing.
Awesome. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. You can also go to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Group on Facebook so you can connect with Kyle and Lolita and ask your questions that you want them to answer on the show. Subscribe too so that you can get the latest episodes. Lastly, to stay updated, head on over to limitless-estates.com and sign up for the newsletter. If you're interested in partnering with Kyle and Lolita, sign up on the Contact Us page so you can talk to them directly. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in again next week for another episode.